How are you doing? Any of you have any trouble getting kids off to school this week? Yeah, do you have any people who are sort of fussy and complain when it comes to getting up early? Any of you have people like that? Any of you people like that? Yeah, we all have that. You know, there's the old saying by Benjamin Franklin, early to bed, early to rise makes you healthy, wealthy, and wise. And the idea in American education system has been, hey, kids need to get up early and go to school. Lately, they found out actually it's better for them to sleep a little bit. The research that my teenage daughters tell me about all the time. And, you know, it's sort of been a myth in our society. And as I was thinking about that, as we kick off this fall, I was thinking about myths that we can buy into. There is an article, a little bit disconcerting when you think about it. The article is called "Your Mother Lied to You." How do you like that one? And it's some of the myths that our moms told us that I think that some of us as adults might operate under today. See if any of these are familiar to you. You need to pour some hydrogen peroxide on that. Have you heard that one? Well, those healing little bubbles actually cause cellular damage and prolong the healing process. Thanks, Mom. Well, remember that when you're in a home. Okay, don't crack your knuckles or you'll get arthritis, right? You've heard that. There's actually a surprising amount of scientific and anecdotal research done on knuckle cracking. In fact, one doctor, Dr. Donald Unger, he did an anecdotal one where he cracked the knuckles on his left hand for 60 years and didn't on his right hand. He did this every day, evidently had a lot of time on his hands. And at the end of it, he looked at him and he goes, "Nope, pretty much they're all the same." And so how many of you, go ahead and raise your hands. I know there's people watching on our campuses as well as Quad Duval. How many of you would say that you thought that knuckle cracking could cause damage to your hands? Okay, a lot of you. Well, what I want you to do is experience some incredible freedom. Come on, let's just do it right here. Okay, come on, all at once. No, yeah, that means you, sir, you too. I'm sorry, ma'am. No, the ready, set, crack him. Yeah. Doesn't that feel good? It says the only real adverse effect of knuckle cracking is it annoys the people around you. That's the only adverse effect of it. Another one is don't swallow your gum because it'll take 7 years to digest. You remember that? I mean, I lived in fear of the amount of gum that was piling up on my insides. Well, there has been a number of scientific studies, if you ever wonder where your tax dollars go, on gum and in people's colons, and just gotta, like, I'm not gonna go into the gory details, but let me tell you, we're all good. That stuff just passes right through there. Well, you think when we think about these myths, not really a big deal. They're not going to affect our life. I mean, maybe we've abstained from the joys of knuckle cracking and gum swallowing, and maybe have a little damage from the hydrogen peroxide. But it's really not going to affect us much. But I think there's a common myth that we can buy into when it comes just to life, and then we extrapolate it to our faith. And it really starts from a pretty good place. For Christians, it starts, if you're a Christ follower today, maybe you're not, and if you weren't, hey, I wasn't raised as a Christ follower either. I knew what that was like and later came to that relationship with Christ. See, we talk about having a individual, a personal relationship with Christ. That God has no grandchildren. Every person decides whether or not they're going to become a child of God. And so we think that's true. But although it's a personal relationship, it's not just us and God. For us to grow, for us to experience the best that God has for us, that it means living life with other people. And here's the deal. You know why we don't do that? Is because maybe you've done that before, you've opened up your heart, and you've been hurt. Maybe it happened when it was a relationship, a job, a social group, even a church environment. And I want to say, if that happened to you in a church environment, I just want to apologize. Maybe the people there, maybe they never will. Because God never wanted that for you. God wanted it to be, when you gathered around the right people, that it would be life-changing and life-giving for you. In fact, we're going to look at our very first verse that's really going to frame our discussion today. It's from the book of Proverbs, which is the wisdom book of the Bible. And Proverbs 13:20, if you'll take out your outlines. It says, "Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm." It's sort of interesting when you look at that. It doesn't say the fool suffers harm. It says if we hang around foolish people, we suffer harm. You say, are you calling people foolish? Yeah, I was in a fraternity. I know what it's like. And it, you know, it usually was, hey, watch this or try this. And we've had that where we've hung around people who've led us in a direction. And like I said, it could just be a little thing. Where it's sort of a dumb thing we did. But maybe that dumb thing was a big thing. And we realize how much the relationships we have impact our life. Some of you are you're here a week early because, you know, you know we're doing the Raising Amazing Kids series. You just want to check out, make sure we're not a cult or something like that. Well, let me tell you this. If you are an incredible parent, if you're the best parent in the world, your influence is insufficient in your child's life. You are never going to get even close to the results you want without other people validating the things that you believe. Because I know this is hard to believe. At some point, your children think you're not as smart as they are. And So that will happen. That'll happen to all of you. You can do whatever. You can, you know, throw them up in a cabin or do whatever. Just say, I'm not going to let them be around that big, bad world. But they'll come to the realization you're not too smart. Or at least they'll come to that conclusion in their own mind. And there's going to need to be other people, the right people, because there will be other people. But the right people who would lead them in the right direction. When your marriage is on the rocks and you say, you know, I just don't have it in me, I can tell you how it's going to turn out 99% of the time by the people you've surrounded yourself with. In fact, there's been this this statement. It seems true to me. I haven't verified the scientific research, but that basically we're the average of our five closest friends. If you look at the average of your five closest friends financially, or your five closest friends, you're probably the average somewhere financially. Not all the time, but most of the time. You think about that in terms of health, you're usually the average. Think about that in terms of your marital happiness, you're probably the average. Your spiritual life, you're probably the average. And if you have the right friends, that's amazing. But if you look at your friends and you say, man, I want different results, then we need the right people around us. Pastor and author Craig Groeschel says, show me your friends and I will show you your future. Maybe you were looking for a job and people said, it's not what you know, it's what? Who you know. And there's some truth to that. By the way, eventually you have to know something, because you can know the right person and not know anything, and then you're called fired. That's what you're called. But we know that, even today, even with LinkedIn and all those things, that many people, I don't know if most, but maybe approaching most, it's who you know, and that affects your career. It affects so much in our life. So here's the key idea. Who you're with determines where you're going. Who you're with determines where you're going. So to consider this, what I want to do is I want to revisit the classic passage when it talks about having the right people around us, about Christian community. See, Jesus, after he gave his life and rose again from the dead, ascended to heaven, before that happened, he said, I want you to be my witnesses to the ends of the earth. I want you to let people know that there is hope for them. And he also created a community, and we read about that in Acts 2:42 and following. It's described, and by the way, for those of you who have been around the Bible or maybe new to the Bible, you need to read each genre of literature in its genre. For example, there are some that are commands, you know, hey, you should do this, or proverbs, sayings of things that are normally true, or psalms, which are a devotional theology. Acts is more a historical theology, and so it describes the life, how God worked in the lives of early Christians. And so what we're going to do is look at that and draw some conclusions. It says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and held everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added daily to their number those who were being saved. See, this is what relationships look like in the early church. It's kind of amazing, isn't it? No one had any needs. No one stood alone. So my question as we head into the fall is, are you willing, are you ready to maybe engage for the first time significantly in relationships that will help you in your life and in your faith, or maybe go to the next level to deepen those? I want to consider what the right community, the right group of people looks like in your life and mine, and how to get more of that, and what will be the natural outcome. See, it's so important, the right community. Now you say, are you saying there's a wrong community? Yeah. We have the saying around here, next right step. You know why we say next right step instead of next step? Because there's a next wrong step too. We all have a next right step that we can take that'll lead us into a life, the life that God wants us to have, that's more fulfilling and more purposeful, but a next wrong step that can lead us away. And for some of us, the next wrong step is we become isolated. It's a tendency we get overwhelmed. You know, we have 2,000 friends on Facebook, but we don't have anyone who we can really connect with in a deep way. I don't know if you ever watch the Wildlife Channel or Animal Planet or something like that. Oftentimes, they'll show an animal, usually who's gotten away from the herd, and usually it's an animal that's lower on the food chain. And it's really a horrific thing, by the way, if you've ever watched this with your children. So they're the animal, and then you hear the commentator's voice, and here comes the cougar. And then you see this little animal walk, and then all of a sudden, pounce. And what happened is it was safe when it was in its right community, but all of a sudden it got isolated, and it became dangerous. And you know this to be true in your life. You've had a friend where all of a sudden they become disconnected. They're not returning your texts or your calls as much. And there's always, hey, we'll get together in a few weeks, and you call them in a few weeks, and they say, I really can't get together now. And then you talk to your other friends, and they'll say, yeah, they've seemed sort of distant too. And then you've seen this a dozen times. You hear a few weeks, a few months, a few years later that they started to make some decisions that were real destructive in their life because they've become isolated. You get what I'm saying? Sort of like the show The Walking Dead, which is an amazing theological show. It's about the zombie apocalypse. By the way, for some of you, I got to let you know, that's not real. Not going to happen. And it happens in Georgia. Maybe it does happen in Georgia. The zombie apocalypse, and there's the biters, and basically they're infected. And the group of people, the survivors, there's a saying that they say again and again, is we have to stay together because we are all that we have. Each other is all that we have. Well, we see this in the early church, that people stayed together in an environment, quite honestly, that was hostile, yet they thrived. And if you want to thrive this next season, this next year in your faith, it's not going to just be about you. That's part of the equation. It's going to be about the right community in your life. So what does that mean? I want to look at that, and we're going to look at what that meant for them. Is number one, it'll be intentional. That it doesn't happen by accident, that we're going to make the choice to have the right people around us. See, oftentimes it's just through convenience, it's through who we work with, but it needs to be intentional. We read in Hebrews 10, 24 and 25, it says this, and let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. And it says that you need encouragement. I don't know about you. I need some encouragement in my life. We all could use some more encouragement. My youngest daughter, she is starting to drive. She's going to get her driver's permit. So before that happened, I called the insurance company. And I called the agent, and the agent said, "Oh, you have two teenage drivers. Boy, are you in for it." And I'm like, "So I'm paying you for this?" You know, so she was a little discouraging. We actually went up to the place to get her learner's permit, and as we were there standing in line, we had all the paperwork, and the lady at the counter said, "Oh, you can't get the permit because it has to be within 10 days of her starting driver's ed. So I'm sorry, you can't have a permit." And I said, "Thank you, Lord Jesus." And see, we talked about answered prayer last week. We need people who are going to encourage us in our life. Who is invested in your best? It says in Romans 12, 10. And by the way, if you'll notice the supporting verses, they're all the one another's of the Bible, where it talks about what Christian community looks like. It says, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. And sometimes for us to be intentional, it means intentional in relationships that we pare back. I'm not saying, oh, just get in this Christian bubble where it's other people who believe exactly the same thing that you do. But sometimes if we were going to say, the average of my five closest friends is someplace I don't want to be. And there are some people who, maybe it's because of pain in their own life, that every time you're around them, there's always a critical comment. It's always a little too competitive. There's always a cutting remark. And if that's the case, I've been there with folks, and I think it's okay to have a conversation. But if they don't change, then maybe something needs to change in the relationship for us to make room for those relationships that'll be life-giving. So we see in the early church that it was intentional, and also that it was Christ-centered. That it was focused on the work that Jesus was doing in their lives. See, we need people who will be there to support us. When we prayed on Sunday and we show up to work Monday and the prayers didn't work, the boss didn't quit, and we need people to support us, not just on the weekends, but throughout the week. Notice this next verse. It says, let the message of Christ dwell among you richly. How does that happen? It says, as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs of the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. It means that we're encouraging one another. Well, what happens when I have some things in my life that don't really reflect God at all? In fact, I'm the furthest thing from that. The Bible talks about that too. Because you have a problem, we all have a problem. It doesn't mean that we should face rejection. But we need to bring it out into the open. And it says this. It says, therefore, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. Who's someone who you've allowed to get up under the problems that you have and to share those? One of the most powerful moments in my life, I went up to Young Life's Malibu Club in Canada, not as a student, but as a leader. And there was some stuff I was carrying, and you say, what was it? I'm not going to tell you. And so I found someone, and I said, you know, there's some things I've never confessed to anyone. And I know it says that not only am I supposed to confess to God, but to another person. And so can I tell you a few things? And he said, I don't speak English. I said, all the better. No, he didn't say that. Well, they're also sacrificial. These relationships, and we see that, in fact, the Bible word from the original languages in the Greek is koinonia for community or fellowship. And you know what that means? It means they were devoted. It's a devotion to one another. See, they shared with one another. And it's that deeper level of relationship. We all have that. Maybe you grew up like this. Maybe you didn't. That you had people come visit your house, and you had sort of the front room kind of people, the people who would come in your formal room, and you know, the kind of room that your mom would vacuum herself out of to where there were no footprints, and that you weren't allowed to sit as if you were dirty all the time or something like that. And so you had those people, and those were polite conversations, and you were often getting to know each other, but really nothing was real significant was happening there. You were sharing facts with each other, but you were never sharing your heart. And then there were maybe people who were living room people. They were or rec room or whatever you called it. These were people who you knew a little bit better, who you didn't have to get as prepared for, but you still would share on a little deeper level. And then there's what I call, and we have friends like this, kitchen people. You know, the kind of people who they come in the door and they go right for the kitchen, and you don't have to offer them anything to drink because they know where the glasses are and they help themselves. And these are the type of people that that you don't have to get ready for because they accept you exactly as you are. Maybe you've had that. And it's these people where you share your heart is shared, and maybe sometimes tears are cried. And maybe nothing said at all because nothing needs to be said. And we all yearn for those kind of relationships in our life. And they happen when we are intentional, when we say, you know, we need something deeper than a hobby, than being in the same neighborhood. But that I want God's very best for your life. And these are selfless relationships. And in fact, we're given this instruction by Jesus. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Now, how does that, what's that love? That love is sacrificial. That love says, I'm looking for your best. Yes, it's reciprocal in the sense that you're supporting each other, but no one's keeping score. And if you will open yourself to the right kind of community moving into this next year, I think you will see spiritual growth on a level you've never seen before. See, there's a myth, and I know it's a myth because it never works, is that if I simply get enough information, I will become spiritually deep. I've been a pastor for 25 years. I've met thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people. I've never seen that happen a single time. It's when we have, yes, a knowledge of God, but we have people around us who are cheering us on towards that relationship with God. Well, what does that mean for me? What does it mean if I will step into that kind of community? It means spiritual growth, that we will grow spiritually. That is, we face struggles in life. You know, think about it. Think about it's like when you go to the gym. How do you grow? It's like you do weights, and there's weights at a gym. Some of you aren't tracking. There's this place called a gym. It's where they exercise. and so the weights sort of tears down the muscle, and you start to grow even through the stress. See, the stress will either destroy or it'll build up. But it's sort of like going to a gym and you're doing maybe a bench press and you have a spotter. You're always willing to try more because someone else is there with you and supporting you. If you look at a person and you say, I'm amazed by their faith, let me tell you that this did not happen by themselves. It happened because there was someone else with them. We read in 1 Thessalonians 5:11, therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. See, we have a massive tool to help you. You know, this has been a great season for our church. In fact, last weekend on our Redmond campus after the 11:15 service, we're running out of parking, and this weekend, new parking lot opened up, sort of great things. God's doing amazing things. But it's great to grow broader as a church. And I want you to know that if you're new around here, it's not this club where you need to learn the secret handshake and it takes you 2 years to get involved. Man, we want you to get involved right now. But not only broader, but God calls us to grow deeper as well. And I truly believe that happens with not just because you hear this great teaching on the weekend, as awesome as it may be, but because there's people cheering you on in that relationship. We have over 100 growth groups, I think, that have open registration. And this weekend, we have a growth group guide. And I'm going to encourage you. In fact, this is, you know, usually I don't put a lot of pressure on people. I guess I could wait till the offering and do it then. Would you like that better? Let me put pressure on you a little bit now. Would you say, you know what, I'm going to be intentional about a Christ-centered relationship? So in that, there's a growth group guide, and you can look in there. Like I said, there's a ton of groups, and you can put it on your connection card, groups that you'd like to get more information about. Doesn't start for a few weeks, but the earlier you sign up, the better. We've had groups fill up, many of them fill up quite fast. And we'll have about 1,000 adults or so in our growth group system this fall. And I would encourage you to take that step. In fact, I've gone this far to say, you know, if you can do one thing a week, even make the growth group your priority. I want to have you here at church. I really do. But there's something that happens spiritually when we live life on life and we encourage each other. See, you'll never do all God wants you to do without the right people. And then, do you know what else you get is not only spiritual growth when you do that, you get a safe place. You get it where you don't have to perform to be accepted. See, I know many of us, that's how we live our life, is that we feel like we have to perform all the time for people to accept us. There's a scripture, it's not in your outline, but it is in the Bible. King Solomon in the Old Testament wrote this. He said, two are better than one because they have a good return on their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. but pity the fool. No, pity the man. That's Mr. T who said that. Pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. What is he saying? He's saying if you're going through a marriage difficulty by yourself, you're in real trouble. If you're watching your kids go crazy and self-destruct and you have no one around, you're in real trouble. If you're being tempted in a way and there's no one who you're letting in, you're in real trouble. It's interesting, King Solomon had all these people around him. He had all these people who served him and worked for him. And yet he writes again and again about loneliness. Why do you think that's the case? I believe it's because he knew what it was like to be surrounded by people, to have a place of influence and power, and to feel incredibly alone. And he also knew that God has a different plan for us than that. You know, as we get to hear story after story of people who take a step towards Jesus Christ, the great news is that there's a transformation that happens spiritually, not just relationally, when we say, God, I'm willing to open up my heart. I'm willing to open up my heart to some people, and I'm willing to open up my heart to you. I want you to hear one of those stories from our Duval campus. Take a look at this.